After generations of skepticism, Americans have, at long last, been completely won over. We love raw fish. And at this point, grocery store sushi is not enough. We consume raw fish in many forms. Currently, the big craze is the poke bowl. The poke bowl has its origins in Hawaii, and the guy who brought it to Kansas City before it got popular stateside is Bob Shin of Bob Wasabi. I'm Gina Kaufman, and to kick off today's show on the joy of fishes and meats served cold and raw, we're going to hear Bob's take on the poke bowl. KCUR's Andrea Tudhope recently paid him a visit at his shop on 39th Street.
Bob Shin, who you might know as Bob Wasabi, is known around town for serving up some of the freshest fish in Kansas City. But he has another nickname.
Apparently the rumor has gone out that he's the complainer, and a vendor told us that. That's his reputation.
That's Bob's daughter, Tanya Shin. She works with her dad at the restaurant.
Is that true?
Yeah, a little bit.
Bob has earned this reputation from the fishermen who sell him salmon, sea urchin, octopus, and eel. He's willing to pay the price for the highest quality fish he can find. And if it's not to his standard, he sends it back.
That's why my own prayer, I want to do my own style, you know, the right style.
He opened Bob Wasabi about 4 years ago. He serves made-to-order sushi, sashimi, and nigiri. It's a traditional Japanese menu with one exception, a poke bowl.
Poke bowl is the most, you know, island style, island people.
Native to Hawaii, poke is traditionally a fisherman's dish. After a day of fishing, they'd take their raw scraps and sprinkle them with Hawaiian salts and seaweed for a quick snack.
That's most poke is after World War II in a Hawaii area history. So that people eat poke bowl because they catch a lot of tuna over there, you know, called ahi. So still there, even McDonald's, they're selling poke.
Tossed with a light sauce and fresh vegetables and served atop a bed of sticky sushi rice, this simple old-school dish becomes the poke bowl. It's become somewhat of a fad on the mainland recently. Bob brought his techniques back from Hawaii. He's actually originally from South Korea, but he lived and worked in Maui for a few years. He claims he was the first one to serve a poke bowl in Kansas City.
A lot of people are using the poke now. I think I'm the first one I started here. Yeah?
A couple of years later, three years ago, they started the poke here.
People like it. Everybody have their own style of the poke.
It's a quick walk across the quaint restaurant to the open kitchen, where Bob shows me how he prepares his poke bowl. He grabs a sashimi-grade tuna fillet from the display window at the sushi bar.
6-7 ounces, something like that.
He cuts it evenly into 1-by-1-inch cubes. The word poke actually means to slice. That's why Bob says when it comes to poke, the fish is the star. In a mixing bowl, Tanya pours the special sauce over the raw tuna.
This is the chili water, and this is the poke sauce that we mix.
She adds thinly sliced onions and fresh cucumber.
So you've got some crunch there.
Then she tops it off with avocado for a little creaminess and baby radish sprouts.
This vegetable, making this one, is a more, you know, fresh.
The real secret is the sauce.
So that's your specialty, right?
That's right. Like here's a pepper and a garlic and a vinegar and a little bit of sugar.
Tell all of his secrets.
So everybody send a copy for me. Everyone making.
Sure.
Yes.
The trick is that it's more a vinaigrette than a heavy sauce. Definitely no mayo. It's a light coating, tart and pungent with a little kick.
How does that taste?
Oh, very super.
The other secret, it's a family business.
Yes, we have our moments. I think we work okay together. What do you think?
Here? That's right.
Family avocatira.
Yeah, all family.
He thinks I'm
but,
too.
There are too many boss.
Bob likes to joke there are too many cooks in the kitchen, so to speak, with his wife and Tanya and his other daughter Esther, who visits, his son and his son-in-law. It's definitely a family affair.
But most of homemade style, you know? Yeah. So make it special, okay.
That was Bob Shin talking to KCUR's Andrea Tudhope from Bob Wasabi, a cozy little sushi place on 39th Street where they've been serving up poke for 4 years. For a little context on the bowl trend and the poke bowl trend in particular, let's turn to Tom Rosten, a food journalist and poke enthusiast who's covered the trend extensively. He's based in New York. Hi, Tom.
Hey there, Gina. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing well. Doing well. Happy to talk about poke.
You dubbed poke the hottest trend this season back in 2016. So we realize it's not new. Pacific Islanders have been eating poke for a really long time, and the rest of us have had at least a couple of years to familiarize ourselves. But in Kansas City, it does really seem to be in the midst of an explosion in popularity. So I'm wondering if it sounds like 2019 here is 2016 in New York?
You know what? I got to say, it's still exploding here. So I think it's a very long season. I mean, every day I feel like there's a new poke place opening up in New York City. And so I think this has been a big trend that looks like it's going to stay for a while.
In 2016, you told readers about your introduction to poke. Can you tell that story for our listeners?
Yeah, sure. My wife is from Hawaii. I'm lucky that way. And my father-in-law, who is a real foodie, old-school foodie. In fact, I think a lot of people in Hawaii grow up as foodies because the food is just so good there. It's so fresh. So I was just sitting on a veranda, and he just put out a bowl of rice and with some fresh tuna, raw tuna, and it just was exquisite. And I have to say, what really struck me at the time was that he took this tuna straight out of like a saran wrap, a styrofoam container that he had gotten out of the supermarket. In other words, right out of the supermarket, they can get incredibly fresh fish. And to me, you know, I was listening to your news report, and the sauce is essential, but of course the fish is also, the freshness of the fish is key. And I think context is everything about food. When you're sitting on a veranda, you got a beer, the ocean breeze is going by, and you're tasting something really delicious that hits all the right points, whether it's, you know, the salt, the acid, the sweet, that makes like an unforgettable meal. And for me, that's what it was when I first had poke.
You write that poke has, and I'm quoting now, the primal invigorating thrill of eating raw fish, but without the preciousness of sushi. Explain that.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, like, I don't know, a lot of us, we like to just dig into our food, right? And so when you're eating sushi, you can, you know, scarf it down, but to me, there's more of a formality to it. And when you have it in a bowl and it's chopped up, you know, raw flesh, it just feels more primal, and it's just exciting. That's one of the reasons I think it's so popular.
So why do you think it is catching on right now? I mean, beyond just the primal thrill of your tooth going into the raw flesh of fish, because that seems like that would be eternal.
Yeah, well, you know, okay, so it's taste, but I think it's following a lot of trends. I mean, the fast casual trend that is just, I mean, it's big in Kansas City, right? Fast casual? I mean, you've got
it is, yes.
Chopped and Chipotle's and all that?
Yep.
Yep. Yeah. So, I mean, that has taken the country by storm. And the reason for that, it's basically economic, right? It's these stores are fairly cheap to open up. They've figured out how to do it to scale, and they're satisfying the customers of today's needs. I mean, people want healthy. People want customizable. You know, they want to say, I want this, I want that, I don't want this, I don't want that. And they get the chance to do that on the line there. And then it's relatively cheap. And then, of course, most important, it's fast. So it's like it's meeting both the supplier's needs and the consumer's needs at the same time.
You have noted some pretension in the Manhattan poke scene, symbolized for you in the form of an accent over the E.
Yeah. I actually looked up a little bit of the poke places in Kansas City, and I see some of them do have the accent. Hey, you know, all the power to them. They got to get a business going. But yeah, traditionally, there is no accent. It's the accent aigu on the E to as a nod to people that it's pronounced poke. But hopefully people can figure it out on their own. Just, you know, through conversation. Let's just talk about our food, right? And then you'll learn about it that it's pronounced poke.
So this is part of a larger trend. And in fact, maybe the poke bowl even heralded this trend. I'm not sure. Food bowls, just food bowls.
No, I think food bowls preceded that. You can go back to the original food. I mean, I guess the original food bowls are, you know, 2,000 years ago, right?
Right, yeah, if not more.
Yeah. I mean, but you know, it's funny. I love this. The Wall Street Journal, I think a couple of years ago, said that the bowl is the new plate. So the idea that the plate is no longer the fundamental dinnerware. Now it's the bowl, and it's really true. I mean, you look around. I mean, especially people who are on the go and eating lunch at work. Bowls are just so much more convenient. You get all, you know, it just works with what you're getting in there. And you're on the go and you get as much as you can and then you're on your way.
But I mean, in theory, there's room for many kinds of dishware.
Yes, of course there is. but what's the next, I mean, there's always something next, right?
Right. What's something has to be the next something else.
Well, I guess it's the Slurpee. I guess if everything is just we drink it all out of a cup, or you know, it's the pills. That's the sci-fi stuff. We'll just keep, you know, knocking down pills and that'll satisfy us. But hopefully, we're not living in that Black Mirror episode yet.
I have recently heard that some people are anti-bowl because they don't believe in mixing everything together. And as the parent of a toddler, I have to say this sounds incredibly toddler-esque to me. But is that a culinary stance being
That's
taken
really
seriously?
It's an interesting point. It's a very interesting. I mean, you know, there's always going to be arguments about food, how you should eat food, and what's more authentic, and what's right, and what's wrong. Ultimately, I think, you know, in the 21st century in America, it's going to be whatever you want it to be is going to work for you. But I mean, I do think that there is a rationale for that. I think traditionally, don't Middle Eastern foods, like, you're supposed to keep them separate, like on the plate, like, you know, you keep the oils and the hummus and the tabbouleh, and there's an arrangement to it. So I think ethnically, you know, culturally, there are different ways to present food. I mean, come on, let's enjoy our food however you can. One trend is going to beat another one tomorrow, like we were saying before.
Yeah, I guess that this did make me think about this sort of traditional American meal. And I don't really even know, you know, how to quite put it, but this whole cooked hunk of meat with a side of vegetables and a side of starch. So like steak, potatoes, carrots, something like that, each on their own portion of a plate. That's like the quote unquote all American dinner or something. And I never thought about that because it's not how I cook, but maybe that's why the bowl concept does feel novel in this context, on this continent.
Yeah, novel and kind of messy, because it's true. Like, I mean, when you presented your plate, I was thinking about the classic TV dinner, because, you know, you would actually have
totally
a little section, you know, for the protein, and then a little section for your carrot, a little section for your bowl or whatever it is, and then a little section. It's like what we get when we go to on an airplane, if you get food. I guess you don't get food on airplanes anymore, really. But, you know, I guess it's not, actually, even on airplanes, they don't do it this way anymore. But it's true. That traditionally, that conventional way of, you know, having the three or four things that are separate, that's gone, isn't it? I think we just throw it together and we eat it. We eat what works pretty much.
Coming back to poke, any thoughts on the overall embrace of all things raw? Not just fish, but, you know, like runny eggs, serving steak on the pink side. Those things used to be reserved for quote unquote adventurous eaters.
Yeah, no, I mean, I guess that's another wave of the whole foodie era that we're living in. People want to try things in a way that's different, more exciting. I mean, obviously, when you get raw, you need to be fresh, right? That's the biggest danger. And honestly, I do think it's interesting about poke that, in a way, I mean, a lot of the places in New York, when they get poke, they actually get sushi-grade fish. But, you know, let's be honest here. Once you add a little marinade, which most pokés are in, that allows the fish to be a little older. And that's a gray area, right? Because then suddenly the food could be not as fresh as it should be. But overall, I think it's great. You know, raw carrots, raw whatever, you know, raw vegetables. I think it's great.
Well, Tom Rostin, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Tom is a New York-based food writer who analyzed the growing obsession with poke nationwide in 2016 for Food Republic. And now, it's not just poke. We're talking about all of the delightful ways raw fish and meat are being served in Kansas City. 816-235-2888 is the number to call to recommend sushi, fresh oysters, tartare, ceviche, and yes, poke. 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard. And now the food critics are here. As the weather shifts, those cravings for hot foods kind of cool off. So this is the time of year, for me anyway, when things like oysters on the half shell on a little ice with a wedge of lemon, that starts sounding pretty good. And with the growing popularity and willingness to even try raw fishes and meats, we're dedicating today's food show to the many forms they take. Sushi, tartare, oysters, ceviche. We are keeping it cold, and you can join the conversation at 816-235-2888. The critics this morning are Feast Magazine's Jenny Vergara and food blogger Mary Block. They are regulars. Hi, you two.
Hello.
Morning.
And we are also joined for the first time by Danielle Lehman of the newish podcast, Open Belly KC. Hi, Danielle.
Hi, good morning.
So real quick, tell us about your podcast, how it started, where you're coming from in your exploration of the food scene here.
Sure. The mission of the podcast is really simple. It's just to use food as a way to bring people together. So we try to tell stories of the chefs in our community who are cooking really interesting food. Most of them are actually first-generation immigrants who are bringing traditional dishes from their country. And our idea is really just to kind of encourage people to open their minds and get out and explore new foods and get to know their neighbors.
So you are a Kansas City native who came back after a long stretch in Southern California.
I actually grew up in Hutchinson, Kansas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so
you
not
are
too
a
far.
Kansas
I'm a
native.
Kansan. I did spend about 13 years in Southern California, mostly in the Los Angeles area.
So as someone who lived in Southern California for many years, how do Kansas City's raw fish offerings in particular hold up for you?
Well, actually, I was surprised to see we have a lot more options here than I thought we would moving here. You know, you have access to fresher seafood right there, being on the coast, of course. But I think there are a lot of really talented chefs here in our community that are doing a really great job.
So, okay, you guys, in general, my producer Melody likes to call what we're talking about today disclaimer food because of that little asterisk on the menu about how consuming raw and undercooked foods might blah, 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 blah. For people who are just beginning to try these foods, that's probably a scary thing to read. I'm personally desensitized, but I do get it. What are your thoughts?
I think if you're going to eat raw meat and raw fish, you want to make sure you're at a really reputable place, and you want to make sure, like a sushi place, that it's really popular and the fish turns over. And so you're not getting anything left over. But we've come so far, and there are a lot of places like Hirocho's. He's 24 hours from the Japan market to his restaurant. So it's not scary anymore.
Jenny, thoughts?
It's something the health department makes them put on their menus. Yeah. I mean, you know, not to belittle it, but it really is true. And, you know, the chefs are trained to do what they do. And I think Anthony Bourdain kind of famously said many years ago that, you know, basically you don't want to poison your neighbors and your customers. So there's a reason why, you know, we leave these things into a chef's capable hands. I mean, they're very skilled, obviously, at how to treat these things. So they are delicious and fresh, and we can enjoy them with very, very, very minimal risk.
Many moons ago, I worked at Cafe Sebastian under Jen Maloney, and mm-hmm. I remember she used to put on her menu that whole warning, you know, consuming raw and undercooked foods may increase your risk, blah, 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 but it may also be delicious.
Well, and I would suggest everyone read those because each restaurant has kind of taken its own little creative stance to how the wording is, and some of them can be pretty hilarious, like that one.
So let's go category by category. I want to start with oysters. Oysters on the half shell feel very Washington, D.C. to me, or like mid-Atlantic coast. I don't know if that's just a personal association or what, but do we have oyster bars here, an oyster bar scene at all? I remember the City Tavern, no longer around, had a shucking station, which felt very legit.
Oh, you know, I think there's several seafood places that kind of fill that void, although I do miss that place. It was just such a great little kind of crossroads spot, so long live.
Yes.
Yeah. Long live that place. But yeah, I mean, you can still find smaller bars, and usually it's incorporated into their cocktail bar. So you can sit, have a drink, get some oysters, or even there's steaming stations as well. I know Jack's and Bristol both have, I believe, a raw station kind of at the end of the bar. And then they both have steaming kettles where you can get like steamed mussels and those things. But
And when Farina opened, it's an Italian restaurant, but they have a whole oyster bar with crudo and oysters, and they're getting in different ones all the time, and they have a list of what they have that day.
So, Jenny Vergara, where do you like to get oysters? Take us through your oyster recommendation. You have a whole list.
Yeah, you know, the presentation of oysters is very similar wherever you go. And a lot of the restaurants are getting their seafood from the same seafood people. So you tend to see the same kind of things seasonally being offered from both coasts. So I don't know that it really matters too much. I think it depends on just like where you like the atmosphere. So for me, I like Jack's Fish House. I mean, they do a nice job with their oyster bar. They're kind of West Plaza. And it's a chain out of Colorado, but it feels very kind of right place to me in the plaza area. And I like sitting at their bar. I think they do a nice job with their cocktail list, which was originally imagined by Kenny Coors and still carries on with a ton of really talented bartenders. But they also have a checking station where you can watch people. And I think that's part of the action, too. So I like Jack's. It's probably most convenient for me as well.
And any others you'd like to highlight for us?
I think you cannot talk about raw oysters and not talk about Jarocho, particularly the Kansas City, Kansas location, which really made their name on $1 oysters. That was how the chefs and the service industry people started really discovering Jarocho, and the rest of us soon followed. I believe it's Tuesday and Thursday nights. They still do $1 oysters, and then they have on their brunch, they do a weekend brunch that has a raw bar that's full of raw oysters on the half shell, and he gets some of the most incredible, interesting fish. And that's an example where it's not a super fine dining atmosphere. I mean, you can roll in there in your blue jeans or your shorts and your flip-flops and still enjoy, you know, really good quality seafood.
Mary, you mentioned Farina.
Yes. But I don't like oysters.
You don't?
What?
I was wondering. I was like, she doesn't have that on her list, but
that's
okay.
Right. You know, I like Oysters Rockefeller when it's baked and it's got spinach and all that. But if I'm going to go to Farina for the and sit at the oyster bar, I'm going to get one of Michael's crudos.
Explain what that is.
So it's raw fish, a slice. He'll do a little sauce, maybe a ponzu or, you know, some jalapenos. Very simple. And it's a nice way to start the evening.
Crudo is like the Italian version of Japanese sashimi.
And okay.
And the difference is that it always has an oil, a flavor, usually a flavored oil, like olive oil, a really good olive oil, and an acid added to it. So it, in this case, it can take the form of like ponzu, a little bit of, you know, fresh citrus on there, but always some form of oil.
We will get back to crudo, but Jenny, so since you are the main oyster recommender, go ahead. Is there one more oyster spot you want to tell us about?
I cannot believe I'm the only person in this room that likes oysters. What is happening?
I like oysters.
All right.
And Danielle has one, and then we're going to move on to that in a moment. But go ahead. One more.
Okay. I'll do one more. Let's talk about Pearl Tavern up in Lee's Summit. So they have a little seafood spot. It's the guys that brought us Summit Grill. And they, too, have a little kind of shucking station that you can watch that's just kind of built onto their cocktail bar. But really fresh, delicious oysters. And I think it's great that there are seafood places now that are really high quality that are in other places other than downtown. You don't have to travel. You can be out in the burbs and still enjoy really good seafood. So shout out to Pearl Tavern in Lee's Summit.
Danielle.
Yes.
You have a recommendation for both oyster and steak tartare at the Rieger.
Yeah, so the steak and oyster tartare at the Rieger is more of a tartare, but it does have oysters incorporated into it.
So explain technically, like, what is tartare?
Yeah, sure. So tartare is really just kind of a finely chopped steak beef meat. And it's his is served with a mignonette, a little bit of olive oil, some dill, but all of the flavor is really subtle, so you really get kind of that the steak and the oyster comes forward with that. Howard serves his with a sleeve. I swear it looked like a sleeve of Ritz crackers, but they're house-made little biscuits, and they are so addicting on their own. But I think it's a really nice, subtle dish, and if you're interested in trying tartare, I think it's a really great one to start with because the flavors are very mild and delicate, and it's a really beautiful dish.
Okay, we're going to get some more tartare dishes in just a sec, but I do want to take this call from Ellen. Ellen is calling us from Olathe about a ceviche, an octopus ceviche. Ellen?
Hello.
Hi, welcome to the show.
My recommendation is the Silo, the modern American farmhouse. It's west of I-35 on 87th, and they have an amazing octopus ceviche. My daughter and I were out there a couple of weeks ago, and I have to tell you, I was kind of, my socks were knocked off because, A, if it's called a farmhouse, I don't really expect ceviche. And then not only do I not expect ceviche, I don't expect good ceviche. And it was wonderful. I mean, you hardly had to chew it. It was so tender. It was chopped up fine and served with avocado, and I'm trying to remember, maybe perhaps a little bit of tomato. It was outstanding.
Well, so that's called Silo Modern Farmhouse?
Yes.
Okay. That's a recommendation for octopus ceviche. Has anyone ever had octopus ceviche here?
I think Carlos Falcone has it at Jarocho's, and it's very good there. All of his ceviches are fabulous.
And we're going to get back to ceviche, but we were on tartare, and I don't want to lose that thought. You can call 816-235-2888 to tell us about any of the many varieties of raw fishes and meats that you can consume in a chilled fashion on a Kansas City menu. 816-235-2888. So back to tartare. Mary, what are the best tartare dishes in town from your perspective?
My favorites are a Corvino and rye. At Corvino, he changes the preparation occasionally. Right now, it's got sour cucumber and horseradish. He also does a mustard seed version I love as well. And he has a homemade cracker or something to scoop it onto it if you want. And it's just superb. Rye, their version is a little bit more traditional. They serve it with grilled sourdough, and it's got capers and Dijon and pickles and egg yolk. And rye has a beautiful steak program, so you know their steak. Their raw beef is going to be really fine.
Yum. Okay. Jenny, your tartare recommendations?
I'm going to talk about Pierrepont's. So, you know, I will say this about tartare, you know, the ground beef version with the egg, kind of raw egg nestled in the middle. I don't know that that presentation still exists in Kansas City. All the ones I have seen really incorporate the egg in either a dressing that is dressed, the beef is dressed in it, or it's like a cured egg yolk that's kind of shaved on top type of situation. So I think that is an interesting thing that we're now hand cutting our tartare, which gives it a different texture altogether. It's more chunky.
Do you think that is influenced by the growing popularity of sushi? Just because visually almost it seems to reference that a little bit more.
I think it is to make it more palatable to all people.
Well, and it also allows the flavors to come out. Yeah. If you have ground tuna in a sushi roll, it
kind of loses
mush.
The flavor.
You don't know what you're tasting. And I think the same goes for raw beef. It's chopped. You can actually taste it.
And I think the chef is wanting to bring the certain flavors forward in their tartare. I mean, there's a million different presentations now for it. So I think that classic one was really kind of boring. I mean, if you think about just kind of raw meat and a raw egg, and it was kind of a do-it-yourself kind of adventure. And so I think chefs now are like, I'm going to direct this a little more and put the flavors I want into my tartare.
I suspect that boring was at one time a little bit more desirable in mainstream food culture.
Well, and I, you know, kind of classic French is basically what I should say, really. I mean, I think the flavors, though, would have been, I don't know, meat and raw egg, make it yourself. But my example would be at Pierrepont's at Union Station. So they hand cut, obviously, their steak tartare, and they use a caper Pepadou relish. So this is the pickliness of the caper with kind of that sweet hot heat that you get from a Pepadou pepper. I just love that. It's got a little bit of grain Dijon, some frisée, and a quail egg grabiche, which is like a dressing that is made obviously with raw egg, black garlic, and it's served with herb crackers, basically. And it's just delicious. It's a great, great dish. Love that at Pierrepont's.
And tell us about the other ones.
Okay, so I have Blue Stem as well on my menu. In their lounge, they are serving a hand-cut beef tartare with braised sauerkraut, which is kind of interesting, truffle Dijon, which the truffle really comes through on. I like it an awful lot. And then pickled mustard seed. There's a lot of kind of mustard seed, mustard flavors in a lot of the, or it's creamy. It kind of seems to take kind of two different, this seems to kind of sit right in the middle. But I like this because I like the kind of mushroom umami that is brought out with the truffle. And then Jack's as well, Fish House and Oyster Bar that we've already talked about also has a really good steak tartare.
Mary, your tartare recommendations?
I left off two, so I'm glad you came back to me. One, at Westport Cafe, they're two Frenchmen, so you expect it to be very classic. But they've got a little twist on it. They serve it with avocado wasabi and Asian pickles. And it just has a bit of heat to it that I love.
I like that.
And then at the Savoy, Joe has a hamachi crudo and steak tartare. And the crudo is served with olive oil ice cream. Yes, I said olive oil ice cream and some puff rice.
I'm totally intrigued by that.
It's very unusual. You got to taste it to understand it, but it's really good. And it's a nice contrast with the raw fish. And then the tartare is more traditional with mustard and pickles.
Mm, okay, this sounds really good. So while we're on beef, you've got some beef carpaccio on your menu, on your list, Jenny.
You know, it is my menu.
It is your menu.
I carefully curate this menu every week.
Explain what that is, first of all.
So beef carpaccio is an Italian dish, and I have not found it in many restaurants. And so the one place I continue to eat it, and it's really about the only thing I'll order off the menu at Brio, Italian Grill, which is on the plaza. It comes in a very large platter. So the presentation I kind of adore because it's you know, big and takes up the whole table in a giant platter. And then it's thinly sliced beef, just the most tender. You can almost see through it. It's so delicate. Then it has a little bit of kind of a salad green that's tossed in a vinaigrette and some crackers. And the idea is you just maybe break off a little piece of cracker, scoop up some of that the beef slices and just kind of layer it onto your cracker, then with a little salad maybe to kind of cut the richness. And usually it has a little bit of mayo mustard aioli of some kind that's been kind of drizzled on top. That's what they do at Brio. So it's the only place I've found it. And it's the one thing that I always get. If I'm on the plaza and somebody tunes up for Brio, I'm like, okay, I know I like that dish, so I'm good.
Mary,
that and a glass of wine.
Yeah, Mary, you are recommending it at Anton's.
Yes, and Anton's has an in-house butcher shop, and they have this wonderful beef carpaccio. I've had it in Europe where I just don't think you can get it any better, where you just have beautiful thin slices of beef, some olive oil, a few cracks of pepper, salt, maybe some Parmesan. And this comes close to that. They do capers and shaved Parmesan on top. And I just eat it with a knife and fork, and it's wonderful.
That's good.
But olive oil is the key, I think, on top.
Danielle, you are recommending something that is beef, a dish called Kitfo?
Kitfo, yes. So Kitfo is a Ethiopian version of a tartare. So it's kind of a similar preparation, but the meat is actually coated in purified butter and a blend of Ethiopian spices. So I like to get this at Desta's Ethiopian Cuisine out in South Overland Park. It's served with a side of injera bread, which is the traditional Ethiopian fermented bread. It's very thin, like a pancake, and you kind of use it to scoop up the meat. And it's also served with your choice of side, and they have some really wonderful vegetarian sides there as well. But I think that's one dish that if you enjoy tartare, but you want to kind of expand your horizons a little bit, it's a really great dish to try.
Let's talk to Steve in Kansas City, Missouri. Steve is calling. We're back on oysters now, I think. Steve, is that right?
That is right. Hey, Gina, love your show. Listen all the time. You're awesome.
Thanks. You know the way to my heart. But go on. What's your recommendation?
Well, I tell you what, it's kind of weird to think of a grocery store as a go-to place, but Whole Foods Market, every Friday night from 4 to 7, they do like a raw bar up in their tap room. And they have dollar oysters, fresh crab, some sort of poke, and it's just kind of eclectic. It's well priced, and it's delicious. So I just kind of wanted to throw that into the mix and let you guys know about it.
Well,
if anybody wants to check it out, you ought to come by. I mean, I'm going to be there tonight. It's a lot of fun.
Well, thanks, Steve. So, I did mention earlier grocery store sushi, which I know is not what Steve is calling about, but that the grocery store is now a place where people get all of this stuff, whether they're hitting this raw bar or not.
It's true.
Well, they have in the new Whole Foods that's in Brookside, which is where he's talking about, you can go to the fish section that's kind of there along with the salad bar and the bakery and the pizza and the sandwich station, kind of the what I'll call the grab-and-go food section. And you can actually order them um, to take some of the seafood and chop it up for you and kind of make your own seafood platter. I mean, obviously you're paying for it, but you can make your own plate, which is really interesting.
All right. Well, we have still got a lot to cover, including sushi and what you recommend. What do you get when you want something cold that has not been cooked? We're taking calls about sushi, tartare, bagels and lox. Shrimp cocktail counts for today's purposes, even caviar if you're fancy. 816-235-2888. That caviar is still to come on KCUR's Central Standard. We're back. I'm Gina Kaufman with Jenny Vergara, Mary Block, and Danielle Lehman. We're talking about foods eaten cold and raw, what my producer calls disclaimer foods because of that asterisk. But we're going to focus on the deliciousness of all this stuff. Sushi, tartare, oysters on the half shell. I'd even love to hear about runny eggs, quite honestly. Just anything deliciously served, cold, raw, at least chilled. 816-235-2888. So we have not talked about sushi. Steve just called us about some sushi options, but I'd love to hear all of your recommendations. Danielle, we'll start with you.
Yeah, so there's a couple of newer and more hidden gem spots that I really like. The first one is Ika Grill in Leawood. They've only been open a couple of months, but I think they're a really great choice to go for nigiri and sashimi. They have a great sushi bar there. I think the staff is really wonderful. It's a really nice place to spend an evening. They have great happy hour, and it's some of the freshest sushi that I've found. Another place that's kind of a hidden gem that I must have driven by 1,000 times before I finally went in was Kabuki Sushi, which is actually in downtown Brookside. And that is a really great hidden spot. It's never too busy. It's a great little hideaway in the city. They have really fresh nigiri as well. And those two, I think, are really, you know, kind of either newcomers or hidden gems that people should check out.
So, Jenny and Mary, you are both recommending Bob Wasabi. We heard a little bit from the namesake earlier in this hour, but he was mostly talking about his poke offerings. What about his sushi, which is primarily what he's doing there?
I love Bob Wasabi, and I love their whole family. One of my favorite dishes in town, not just there, is the spicy fish bowl. It's assorted sashimi, rice, veggies, cucumber, lettuce, and a spicy chili sauce, and you get some tongs and mix it all up, and it's fabulous. And I also love his TNT roll, which is, it's not exactly raw because they flash fry it really fast, but it's outstanding.
TNT.
Mm-hmm. Spicy.
Yes. Mary, and I love the confidence of this recommendation. This is the only place on your sushi list.
I guess that's right. I get crudo at other places, but this is by far my favorite sushi spot. I'll go other places, and then I always say, why did I go there? I love Bob Wasabi.
Jenny, what do you love about Bob Wasabi?
So I love the location on 39th Street. It's very convenient for me. I love the family. They are always so kind and remember me when I come in, and even if it's been months and months, which I so appreciate, I love the chit-chat with Bob at the bar. But the main thing I go to Bob Wasabi for is to expand my horizon of raw fish and various types of fish. You know, we've all kind of had the traditional like salmon, octopus, ahi tuna. But to get kind of outside that purview, I think takes someone who really brings in some incredible fresh fish and knows how to present it. So my favorite thing to do at Bob Wasabi is either sit at the sushi bar or at a table and ask what the fresh fish of the day is. And there's usually four or five selections. And then I'll either get a sashimi platter with a couple of each of those, or I'll do a nigiri and just really simply have it presented.
Yeah, and they do a chef's choice thing there, mm-hmm, where you can just
mm-hmm,
sort of...
Mm-hmm. And I'll just say, give me two of all the fresh fish. And that way I'm, you know, like I said, there's only four or five, so you get like eight pieces total. But it really is an opportunity for me to go, I would have never known what this was. I would have never known to order it, but this is delicious. I'm going to get it next time. So that is how I educate myself at Bob Wasabi.
And Jenny, you also like sushi, you and I.
This place has I have such a soft spot for this place in Lenexa because it's close to where my son Tasty lives. And when I pick him up, the one thing I said when I gave birth to my son was I want a kid who eats sushi. And now I do. He's seven.
That's very specific.
No. Like that was the goal. That was the only thing that ever came out of my mouth when I was pregnant with my son is I want a kid who's, and what I meant was I want a kid who will love and appreciate food. And what I have now is a sushi monster with a hollow leg who wants $50 worth worth of sushi every Tuesday, we know when I pick him up for dinner. So I can't complain. I gladly pay that bill. But Sushi U and I is located on 87th Street, and it's just a little family sushi place. It's always hopping, always really busy. They have a lot of creative roles. I think what's just so great about them is that they do have a sushi bar experience that you can have, and the guys are always busy, but they're always kind. And they have very reasonably priced a sashimi platter that's an appetizer platter that has like two pieces of tuna, two pieces of salmon, two pieces of octopus, and I think there's two other pieces of something else. And it's like $11. So you can really get like some wonderful, so that, and you know, maybe a glass of wine and a little salad. They also serve this, I call it free, but I'm sure it's built into the price of the sushi, but this kind of crab salad that's a seaweed salad that they give as a free appetizer to everybody. And they just kind of serve it. You don't order it or ask for it. It just kind of shows up. I could pound that salad all day. I like, maybe the fact that it's free is why I like it so much, but it's just, I love it. And I love the people there. They're always friendly. So Sushi U and I.
I love this macho description. I could pound that.
I could. My son and I now are, so he used to not like it so much because it had the seaweed in it, but now it's like we're fighting for it. Our chopsticks are.
That reminds me of the squid salad at Bob Wasabi. Mm-hmm. Every sushi restaurant has squid salad, but there is something about this one that has so much flavor, mm-hmm. and it's not too chewy. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really is so flavorful and fresh.
Mm-hmm. Danielle, we have not talked about cured meats and fishes. Mm-hmm. Tell me about the smorgasbord at Krogstrom.
Yeah, so I love going to Krogstrom. They have a really great Scandinavian charcuterie board that has a mix of cured meats and cured fishes. They have cheeses on this platter as well. They're one of the only places in Kansas City that I've seen that has pickled herring. So it's a really great spot to hang out, locally owned, of course.
And I can think of my grandpa.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I love pickled herring. I didn't like it at first, but I've grown a taste for it. And I think it's a really great spot to explore some different types of pickled fishes that you wouldn't be able to get anywhere else.
And you also like the lox at Meshuggah?
Yes. Yes. Meshuggah Bagels is the closest thing you can get to a New York bagel in Kansas City.
Focus on the fish.
Yes, of course. Their salty lox is absolutely delicious. I like to get an everything bagel with schmear, of course, caper, tomato, onion. Meshuggah means crazy. So sometimes I go crazy and get the jalapeno schmear, which gives it a nice kick.
Ooh,
but their salty lox is absolutely delicious.
They have lox options. Like you don't just order the lox. You pick which lox you're getting.
Yeah. And they also have a whitefish salad that my husband absolutely loves. I prefer the lox, but there are definitely options there.
They have a pastrami cured lox that is just amazing. And then they do a smoked one, too, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I just got so hungry. Okay, so what about ceviche? We've talked about it a little, but I'd love to hear more. We had a listener recommendation for octopus ceviche, but tell me, you guys, what it is, where you go for really good ceviche. Who wants to kick us off here?
Well, one of the best known is the ceviche at Story. Carl hasn't been able to take it off the menu since he opened.
Has he tried?
I suspect he's not that stupid. He knows he people clamor for it and
what
they'd
sets
be
it apart.
It has so he makes it with fluke, and then it has apples and tomatillos and jalapeno and lime, and it's served in a round mold. And I think it's the sweet and sour and spicy thing going on that just makes it so irresistible. But you ask what ceviche is, and it's fish that has been cooked, and I'm using the, you know, my air quotes, in lime juice or a citrus.
Yeah,
that
so not
breaks
using
it,
heat.
Right, and it breaks it down a little bit. But you don't want to do it for too long because then it will break down the fish.
And so the ceviche at Story is getting also some love on Twitter as we have this conversation. Where else should we go for ceviche, Jenny?
I've got Jarocho on my list, mm-hmm. and, you know, he does several different kinds of ceviche that you can get there, but there's one that has all the seafoods mixed in, and I'm going to butcher this, but it's Velva a la Vida, which basically means come back to life, and if ceviche should be called anything, it should be called come back to life. I mean, that's really, it's refreshing, and it's vibrant. His tends to have a little bit more of like a hot sauce, tomato sauce, lime juice kind of liquid that the seafood tends to be kind of floating in, quote unquote, air quote, cooking in. But I like the combination of all the different seafoods, and no better place to mix and match than at Jarocho. So
it's like Danielle. A seafood parfait.
It is like a seafood parfait. It's beautiful, too.
Tell us about your ceviche recommendations, Danielle.
I also love Jarocho, but I wanted to call out a couple of, again, kind of some hidden gems around the city. The first one is El Pueblito on Southwest Boulevard. I think they have one of the best kind of classic ceviches that I've tasted in the city.
Classic in what sense?
It's not, you know, overly refined. It's just a very simple dish. It's just, I mean, you can get a mixed seafood or a shrimp. I think I got the shrimp ceviche the last time I was there. It's just served with lime juice, of course, really fresh and bright cilantro on top. And they had a really beautiful slice of avocado on top that was just perfectly ripe. Everything was just perfect, but it wasn't over the top. It was just a very simple dish. I love going there. And then also El Pirata's one in KCK that I found recently that someone had recommended to me. And this place is so darling. It looks like a beachside shack. And the owner, Josefina, is just wonderful. They have a shrimp, a fish, and a mixed ceviche that you can choose from. And it's just a really simple dish again. They have cervezas that you can drink, and you just kind of feel transported.
So you guys, before we go, we have two more categories, and we have just a little time. So quickly, we're back on the crudo topic. This is something that we got the explanation for earlier, and that and Jenny, if you can repeat the sort of simple version of this, what is crudo?
Thinly sliced fish that is of Italian, origin, not the fish, but basically the name crudo is the Italian version, and it's got olive oil and a little bit of acid. Citrus of some kind.
Mary, you have a handful of crudo recommendations. Pick one.
Okay. Novel. Novel currently has a hamachi crudo with, and this is a little different, shiitake conserva, pickled green mango, wasabi, and rice pearls. And every rendition of the crudo that Ryan does is always so interesting and light and lively.
And Danielle, you have a crudo recommendation.
Yeah, I love Corvino for crudo. The last time I went in, it was a hamachi crudo, and it's served on a tostada. I think they rotate the seafood out seasonally, so it might be something else now, but it's always a really good choice. And I really like going there to get oysters on the half shell as well. They have an uni toast that's really delicious. You can get a few different options and a nice glass of bubbly and sit at the bar and enjoy live music.
Jenny, one crudo recommendation.
I'm going to go to Plate. The new Plate has opened in Brookside, and they have something called the Mellow Yellow on their appetizer menu, which again is a hamachi crudo. What is it about hamachi and crudo in this town? We should ask that question. It's basically got peppercorn oil, so it's got a little spice to it, and then a honey bell orange vinaigrette, and I'm just a sucker for oranges, cracked pistachio, mustard seed, and a little bit of Merlot salt. And it is just, it looks very simple on the plate, but it is so, so good. Spicy orange citrus, a little bit of nut in there. Delicious.
And I promised that we would end on caviar. So Jenny, you have three caviar recommendations, and I should say, I've only had caviar a couple of times. I'm not sure how influenced I was by just the knowledge that it's this special thing, but there is something really luxurious about it.
It is, and it's expensive, so it's not something that you're getting all the time for sure. The difference is that we now have really good local sturgeon. So Hackleback Caviar is available at Sava for a very reasonable price from Missouri-based fish, and it comes with chives, parsley, shallot, little creme fraiche, and these beautiful crispy, salty potato chips that you can kind of just scoop together and make your own. So that would be where I would recommend, but Eddie V's and Pierpont's are two places who have a full caviar menu that is from usually Russian or Bulgarian sturgeon. And it's expensive and it's a luxury. And I enjoy it just even a pop on a plate just as a little decor. But if you're going to go full hog and enjoy some caviar, I recommend Pierpont's and Eddie V's.
Okay, that's the music. And I said we were ending there, but we did start with poke. We could end there too. Danielle, give a quick one poke recommendation, lightning version.
I like the Whole Foods poke bar as well.
Bowa Ramen has a great one, and it's a full meal. You can share it.
Freestyle Poke in the River Market, and now I think they have a second location now in OP.
All right. Well, their full lists, the critics' full lists, which in none of their cases did we get to the full list. That will be up at kcur.org in time for the weekend. Our time is obviously up. Food critics, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mary Block writes about food on her blog, Around the Block. Jenny Vergara has a famously secret, not secret test kitchen featuring chefs. And she joins us from Feast Magazine. Danielle Lehman is the host of the Open Belly podcast. And their recommendations will be ready for your reference at kcur.org this weekend. You can listen back at your leisure. kcur.org/Central Standard. That's where we archive all our past shows. We're about to enjoy a nice long weekend, but that is a great time to catch up on all the listening material if there are conversations you missed. You can talk to us on Twitter anytime at kcurcst. This show is produced by Melody Rao, Coy Duggar, Chris Young, intern Salisa Kalakal. Sylvia Maria Gross is our senior producer. Linda Cher runs the board. Our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs. I'm Gina Kaufman.